listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
And I am not Paul Strolley, but I am Michael Sterling.
You are Michael Sterling, and I am the magic that is Paul Strolley.
That's something like that.
Said I was a fool to dream.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice to see you, Paul.
Nice to see you.
Thank you.
As always, you know, you always look, normally you look dapper.
Yeah.
But you are dapper.
Thank you.
You are Dapper Dan today.
Really?
Just, you know, the symphony of black and charcoal gray.
Well, these are some of your favorite colors.
I know. Yeah. I know. Because
so I do it for you, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you?
Yeah, I do.
Well, we together we sort of look like, you know, Johnny Cash's roadies. Well, I look like his roadie. You look like his
manager.
Yeah, well, okay. Yeah. That's probably more polite than what I was going to say.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Wow. But right. Dapper, very dapper. Very excited about today because we always talk about, first let's thank our sponsors.
Absolutely.
We?
We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, our primary sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent, agents, as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, simply visit them at breakdownexpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge performingartslive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to them for lending their support to our weekly live arts calendar. So we're grateful
and,
to both
and
of them.
Paul, joining us, as you well know, in studio, mm-hmm. our first guest works in multiple formats and mediums as a producer, director, and writer. Current documentary projects include The Longest Game, The Book of Changes, and South Dakota Trilogy, three short films cut from the same body of footage about the modern Native American experience and art history. Here today to talk about the rock opera, The Demise, please welcome Elizabeth Ng Wong.
Hello.
I have no Native American sound bite, so I didn't really know what to do.
That was like a little cowboy.
That one was perfect.
Oh, thanks for joining us.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me here.
Very, very excited nice to talk to you.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice to be had, is that what you said?
I did.
What kind of show is this?
I don't know. Where are we going with it? It's rock and roll, that's what it is.
Also joining us in studio is the other half of the creative partnership responsible for The Demise. I don't mean The Demise in general. I mean The Demise, the rock opera. He composes music for theater, dance, film, television, multimedia, and classical ensembles, and has composed and directed music for the Tony Award-winning Alley Theater in Houston. He co-wrote and directed the musical Election Day, which ran at the American Theater of Actors in New York. In addition, he has also composed and arranged music for the Discovery Channel, the Atlanta Symphony, the Three Cantors, and several modern dance companies in New York, LA, and Houston. Please welcome Joel Henry Stein. There you go.
Thank you.
Huh?
Thank you. Never had an intro quite like that one. That was special. Right. Thank you.
Well, you know, you're a musician.
They are very much in concert with their backgrounds. They are really meant for each other. So I can't wait to talk to you about your project.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I'm most excited about because we always talk about things. We're talking about this before the show. We always talk about things that are done or in the can or even if they're workshopped. They're already being performed by the time we're talking about them. So it's going to be real interesting to talk about something that's really in its formative stages and hear about it. Although the clips that I have heard, of which we have a few, are just astoundingly good. So I'm very, very excited
to I can't wait to hear that poem.
Share that with them.
Speaking of things that are nice, last night, Golden Globe Awards.
Yes.
That I didn't get to see too many of the award giving.
No,
you saw a little bit.
I saw a little bit. Yeah, it was interesting because I had seen. I didn't see most of. I got my SAG screeners like recently. I get the DVDs from SAG for the SAG votes.
Yeah.
And I didn't see as many as I would have liked. But I prefer to go somewhere else for my movie critiques.
Where would that be?
I go online.
Some cheesy bar where they have a TV or something?
I go online and I look for, on YouTube, I look for Movie Time with Jack Porter.
Oh.
And this is where I go for my movie reviews.
All right.
Jack is a brilliant film critic who just happens to be 3 years old.
Oh.
and Jack has shared his reviews. And I'm going to kick it off and play this little clip, if I could. This is Movie Time with Jack Porter, and we're just going to hear Jack's thoughts on The Artist. Okay?
All right.
So let's kick this off.
I'm ready.
Mom and Dad really like this movie. They said that they took something old and made it new. I thought it was really, really, really poorly. And no one talks and I can't read. Only three.
Okay. Yeah. That was the thing that took me up. He's describing The Artist, and he says, I thought it was really boring because no one talks and I can't read. It's hard to understand it fully, but I truly hope that there are more Movie Time with Jack Porters on the line, because watching a three-year-old... And the rating system is hysterical. That got rated bad as broccoli. The Artist was rated bad as broccoli, but... there was another rating, was two bowls of mac and cheese was another rating, three chicken McNuggets was another rating, and Tangled got four ice cream cones.
Oh, wow.
So there's a whole, you know, wow. But he's an adorable
his
kid.
Head's at.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Except, well, you're three. What else do you have?
Yeah.
Chicken McNuggets. Yeah. No. But it was cute.
And really he's the son of a friend of yours?
Yes, yes. Friends, yeah. Friends of the Sea Glass Theater Company, actually.
Nice.
And they are big supporters of us, and we just... yeah, how do you not love a three-year-old giving
movie
reviews?
He's a critic
reviews?
In the making.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's very exciting.
Isn't that cute?
Yeah, it
I
is.
I thought it was.
Indeed.
But did you see any of it?
A little bit. I saw we were talking to our guest earlier before
yeah.
the show, and I saw the Madonna bit there where she won the best song.
Best song, mm. That's
yeah.
right. Yeah. And yeah. actually, if
she
you...
actually, I thought, looked... fantastic
she
last night,
good.
Right?
Yeah, she did.
She's done some rough patches here in recent years.
She was looking too lean for too long. It was like she had no body fat on her at all. And you know how you just, how hollow your face gets when you just like that? And
yeah.
that's how she looked. She just looked too thin for years. And she looked wonderful.
Well, time. But did you check out those arms? I mean, they were like major cuts in those arms.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
she's yeah. always had that. Yeah,
yeah.
But she used to have that. Her face used to be that taut. And now it just
yeah.
looks like nice.
Yeah.
You know?
She looked mature.
Do you know we're going to talk
mature
about taut
nice.
Faces? Taut faces here on State of the Arts.
No, she looked, there was a kind of an elegant, mature thing that was starting to happen with her.
Jane Fonda's dress. You see Jane Fonda?
Yeah, I read about it. I didn't
oh,
see
wow.
it.
Oh, man.
She's like 70 plus years old now?
Yeah, burned it down.
Yeah.
Well, burned it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A classy... Classic.
Classy dame.
Yeah.
Classy dame, yeah.
I like all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But it didn't hurt us at Sterling's Upstairs, Paul. We had a wild night, a wonderful night, and a great show, and 100 people plus in the room. So, and then LA's Next Great Stage Star, which is a competition that I produce every year, kind of a give back to the Broadway community here in Los Angeles. And
Michael has a supper club in Studio City, a wonderful place, Sterling's Upstairs, like a classic New York supper club. It's a great place.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
And we're six. It's a six-week competition, and we discover new, young talent for the musical theater stage. And all of my peers, judges, judge the competition, from the best artistic directors in town of the major theaters to the directors and the casting people and the agents. And they come and they sign these young people and they hire them, and it's fantastic. You know, really American Idol-like. It's really great fun. So it was a good week.
Yeah.
Good weekend. And
good. And how many of you have? Four more weeks, right?
Four more weeks.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's got to be
20
a
contestants.
Marathon for you.
It is.
Because you have that in the afternoon, and then did you have a performer last night?
Yes, yeah.
Who was the performer last night?
Danny Katz.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And how was that?
Lovely.
Yeah?
That's what I was referring to. It was a sold-out crowd. She rocked. It was terrific.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were talking about... I got confused. You do too many things, Michael.
Yeah.
I don't know which thing you're talking about.
Yeah.
But Danny Katz was very sweet. I spoke to her on the phone before when I was putting together some promotional material for her.
Yeah.
She's very nice.
Yes, she is. She's
yeah.
lovely.
Adorable.
And pretty. And she's
yeah.
a great singer and did a fantastic job.
Oh, so good.
Couldn't have been happier.
Good to hear.
Yeah. But we should move on.
Let's
to
talk
the things
to,
at
let
hand.
Me, let
here.
Me give our yeehaw guest the intro she is due. Our first guest became a freelance producer in film and television in 2003. TV credits include work for HBO, VH1, Showtime, and Discovery. She has also produced theater with particular attention on shows that explore the relationship between the performer and the audience, which sounds fascinating to me. I want to talk to you about this. These projects include a site-specific performance of Chekhov's The Cherry Orchard. Orchard. Small Space, a site-specific theater piece about marriage and intimacy that is performed in kitchens. And Stanley Ann, a one-woman show about Barack Obama's mother that most recently played at the 2011 Capitol Fringe Festival. We're delighted to have Elizabeth Ng Wong with us here today.
So. Thank you.
How are you?
Welcome.
I'm great.
Great. Good.
You
good.
Look great. You
well,
look very
you.
Happy.
Thank you.
I
I'm
like
happy
looking
to be
at
here.
You.
Before we talk about the demise, uh-huh. Which we will get to shortly, I do want to ask you about this other thing, the site-specific theater, because I had an idea for a theater piece a few years ago about something taking place, a one-person show taking place in a bar where one person played everyone that came into the bar over the course of about 5 hours.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, what better to do than to bring it to cities on Monday nights when some restaurants are closed and perform it at actual bars? Mm-hmm. And I'm just fascinated by that, the site-specific theater. What was that like? It just had to be, when you say kitchens, I mean, you're talking household kitchens in people's homes?
An actual kitchen in someone's home. That was actually performed last August. And I've been fortunate to collaborate with two amazing theater directors, Camille Toman and Dan Milne, who I collaborate with through Wonder Bar Productions. Dan and his wife, Jane Nash, actually live in London, and they put together Small Space together. And they came over here in August 2011. And we had two performances, or two weekends of performances, one in a kitchen in Santa Monica and one in a kitchen in Venice.
Oh, man.
And, you know, we create our own seating arrangements. And
are they 99-seat kitchens?
They're equity, they're equity waiver kitchens.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. A few waivers. And you turn someone's kitchen into a performance space.
Oh, man.
And you know, it's so much fun because the audience shows up and they have no idea what to expect. And Dan and Jane, for instance, amazing performers and are willing to take on topics like marriage and intimacy and play at their own marriage. They're actually married in real life. And so people really respond to it because they get that it feels real. It's right there in front of them in a real kitchen.
Yeah.
And you end up having an evening and a performance experience from the audience perspective that is so right there, you know, you're a part of it. And actually, what's interesting is that the work with The Demise on the rock opera that I'm working on with Joel has some of those same elements. So I'm beginning to understand that in the context of my theater work, audience interaction with the performance is something really important to me.
Speaking of that, how in the, well, for the listeners, we have the little synopsis here, but better to hear it from you two. Can you give our listeners sort of an idea of the synopsis of the
sure,
of the rock
sure.
opera?
What is The Demise about?
Yeah.
Well, Joel is actually sitting next to me, and I may ask him to help me in answering.
Chime
this
in, Joel.
To make sure we're both on the same page.
I'm still thinking about the kitchen spaces.
Well, yeah, but let me ask you that
about
that before you answer Paul's question.
Okay.
So, what's the average amount of people you can get in one of these kitchens? I mean, you must choose a large kitchen, probably intentionally, right?
Yeah, there are definitely requirements for the kitchen space. generally speaking, we sat between 25 and 30 people.
Nice.
And so the most important aspect for those kinds of kitchens is that they're more open kitchens.
Right. An open floor plan, as they say on
correct.
The makeover shows.
Yeah.
So the audience is, some of them actually in the actual kitchen and then spilling off to the open area that faces the kitchen, perhaps?
Exactly. I mean, in most instances, there's at least some sort of island that is helping differentiate between the kitchen space and what is generally the performance space and the audience space. But there's no true lines. And, you know, and the lighting is just the lighting in the home. And then, you know, we bring in some additional lighting.
That would be a great way, though, for realtors to pitch properties, though, wouldn't it? You can feed 12, but you can perform to 30.
That's right.
That's in this kitchen.
And everybody wants their media room.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
You probably have made a fortune with this idea.
Yeah.
We don't even know it.
Perfect.
Okay, so the demise, although we can't perform it in the kitchen, interactive, you said.
We
so,
might try. Yeah. No.
We could probably. Yeah.
If there's, if there's a loud. If there's like a wood fire burning oven, maybe we could do it.
So a synopsis.
Okay.
Yeah, so the demise is about Harry Haller, who is a young man in his early, mid-20s. He's a musician, an artist. I hate to say it, but sort of your classic angst-filled musician.
Are there any other kinds, really?
That's redundant.
And we're meeting him on the day that he's actually decided to end his life, which is where the demise sort of starts from. And it's because he's reached that really desperate, dark, super isolated spot. And in the course of the play, the musical, the rock opera, he goes on a journey where different characters challenge him to see a new perspective. Mm-hmm. So there's an element of It's a Wonderful Life. There's an element of
Wizard of Oz, Wizard Yellow of Brick Oz, Road kind of thing.
You know, so that you have these other other characters who ultimately are aspects of his own psyche, challenging him to really assess what he really wants to do that day. And it turns into more of a spiritual journey or an inspirational journey.
Okay.
So the demise ends up not being about his physical demise, but about the demise of his mental hell.
Which I think is
really fascinating.
The demise of the demons that haunt him.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I found intriguing about this was that he makes his way uptown to audition for a residency at the best venue in the land, as it's termed, and it's the name of this place is Devicon.
Yes.
Is
that
correct?
Yeah.
And we have a track here with a song from the demise that I'm going to play now with that title. It is just called Devicon, this track.
Awesome.
Is that correct?
Correct.
All right, let us give it a listen.
That's awesome.
I love it.
That is awesome. Oh, that was just, oh, man.
No offense, Michael, but yeah. I don't want to stop talking to you. I want to play the rest of that track.
Okay? Yeah. I was right there. You ended it too soon.
No, that is, well, you know what? We have another one, too, but we'll have that play us off the air. We have a great one that I didn't get a chance to listen to Devicon before this, but I did get to listen to another track called Sordid Celebration, which will play us off the air at the end of the hour, and we will have the links.
Who
on
did
that,
the vocal on that?
Yeah. I was going to say that is the amazing Laura Johnston singing. She is extraordinary, and she will be singing this Thursday at our show.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Speaking of that, it is Thursday, and it's on the Rocks, right?
On the Rocks, which is the upstairs venue at the Roxy on Sunset Boulevard.
Okay, and that's Thursday night at what time?
8 o'clock.
And anyone who wants information on that can do a Facebook search, right?
That's right. We have a Facebook event page. It's just search The Demise on Facebook, and you'll see a little black and red logo that comes up, and it'll be very clear. This is a sneak preview concert of the rock opera.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
so we're just doing, you know, about two-thirds of the songs from the show. It's not a full production or anything like that, but we're...
But Elizabeth, you were saying earlier, I'm sorry to cut you off, Joel, but you were saying earlier that when Joel performs some of the songs from the musical just in regular, or I said musical, but you know.
Rock opera.
I'm not reading my cards. She's holding up the cards and I'm not reading them. When you just perform them in your regular performances, mm-hmm. the response has just been astounding. And if that song is any indication, we know why.
Yeah, it's been really fun from my perspective because, you know, I'm in the audience listening when Joel is performing those songs. And every time, every song from the rock opera, people have just really, really responded to them. So we're so excited because on Thursday, it will be the first time it's only the songs from the rock opera. You won't have a full sense of the narrative yet, but you'll get the energy of it. And we have amazing singers like Laura who are going to help just turn it into a big party. You know, and the goal for Thursday is to really get audience feedback and to start word of mouth about the show.
Right.
So there's no reading of the book?
No.
On Thursday?
Not on Thursday, no. It's just going to be all out fun and awesome music.
You know what? I think that's wise.
And it will not be in the kitchen of the venue.
No.
Well, that's the big surprise.
Yes.
Damn it, I gave it away.
It's going to be a little intimate.
That's right.
But the I think that's cool though because so much of the time, you know, it's like what auditions or like backers auditions or things like that where you're doing things early on. So much of the time people attempt to present it's not the finished product, but we're going to get as close to the finished product as we can. Right. And I don't think that's wise, because if you do that, then you're only going to see deficiencies.
Right.
But if you go at it the way you two are going at it, which is just to almost like, it strikes me almost like a tasting menu. It's
sure,
like a tasting menu where you get to just try these little things and then whet the appetite for people to come at a later date when everything is... when all the cooking is done and the menu has been planned and everything. I'm sorry, we're on this kitchen kick.
Yeah.
So I'm doing food.
Okay.
I'm doing food metaphors.
Cook, so.
I'm getting hungry.
Yeah, no, I'm down with it. No, and it's also cool from a creative perspective because, you know, we are still working on the show. It's not its final form. And this has given us a chance to work with amazing singers and musicians and to have a show where we'll get direct audience feedback and to understand what you can actually hear of the narrative in the music, which you start to take for granted, you know, when it's just Joel and I sitting in the studio with his voice singing every song, you sometimes miss what the story is. It's
right.
It's already there in the music. So it's been really fun to put the show together and to get that feedback just in the process of it.
And you're performing in this project as well?
Yes, I'm singing, I'm playing guitar, and I'm playing piano, and I'm essentially the musical director as well.
And dancing.
And you're preparing the appetizers.
And acrobats, too.
And parking the cars, right?
I drove a little contortion view.
It's one-stop shopping.
Yeah, everything. Oh, well, the other thing, too, the great thing about a scenario like that, at the Roxy on Thursday, 8 o'clock, do a search for The Demise on the Book of Face. the other nice thing about it is that it's a great conversation generator, because when you're just doing little bits and pieces, people go, okay, now what happens before, you know, just privately afterwards,
right.
You know, what happens before this, and, you know, what happens here, and just, I just think that's
Will they get a summary of the plot or anything to refer to? Or
they will. We will be introducing the show with Christopher Meehan. Is that the correct...
Chris Meehan?
Yeah, Chris Meehan.
He owes me money!
I'm not surprised.
You're not working with Meehan?
Oh, two-bit comic.
No. So,
we love Chris Meehan.
For yourself, Chuckles.
He's been great to agree to introduce the show and to give people a grounding in what the general idea of the show is, since they would not get it if they were just listening to the music. And that way, everyone will have, you know, an idea of what the show will become. And then they can tell us, you know, how much they love the music at the end of it.
Yeah, but how do you think Chris Meehan, and you know him, how do you think he would do in a MC type capacity? Do you think he really whipped the crowd up? I mean, just
we're about to find out. We're very excited, actually.
You got to give him some time, right? You've got to give him 10 minutes or something to warm them up.
Chris is a great guy. We've had him on the show a couple of times, and he's just
he's amazing,
funny
actually,
and
too. When he's been on the show, it's very interesting to watch him because he's not sitting here like we are sitting here. He is sitting here writing as we're talking to one another about thoughts that are crossing his mind that are potentially funny.
Yeah, he was already doing that when we first met.
Yeah. The mind is like working all the time.
Yeah. He left me a voice message once that I... Was that an alarm?
I don't know.
That's
if
the
it
voice
is,
message.
Why is it coming into our...
What? I don't know. Just anyway, I just heard that. You heard that.
No,
the mic picked that up, right? Did you guys hear
it?
I heard it.
Sorry, it missed me. It's my alcohol monitoring bracelet.
I think it was Ing's car.
I didn't lock it in here. Chris left me a voicemail message that must have kept for like 6 months because it was so funny. Because first he left the message, and then he recapped his own message. So he was just like, okay, so let's see. First 15 seconds was jolly banter. And then he just continued to go. And Monica and I were just howling. We just played it forever. Great guy.
Yes, he is.
Great guy. We should do our arts calendar and continue talking about the demise.
Okay.
So do you want to kick it off, Michael? I think we only have one thing to talk about today.
It's true. Oscar, Emmy, and Golden Globe winner Helen Hunt stars in a groundbreaking new version of Thornton Wilder's iconic American play, Our Town. The story of young lovers George and Emily, whose life in a small New England town becomes a microcosm of everyday life. The wisdom of the play, rendered through a deceptively simple story, makes Our Town, an enduring treasure of the American theater. This electrifying new production is directed by Broadway director and MacArthur fellow
Cromer.
David Cromer,
yes.
Okay. No, I thought it was a long name, MacArthur Fellow David Cromer. Is that right?
No, no. His name is David Cromer, but he received the MacArthur Genius Grant.
Oh, okay. There you go. Sorry. I didn't get that part. Let me go back to Mr. Cromer.
He's a friend of mine, too. He's going to be delighted to hear this.
David, pay no attention to Paul. He sets me up every time. Most of the seating for this production will be on stage with the actors instead of the kitchen. And... playing at the Broad stage this time through February 2012.
Yeah, David Cromer, actually, about 25 years ago, we were in a theater company, a great theater company in Chicago called Blind Parrot Productions. Great, just phenomenal company. We did actually a rock musical called Oedipus Requiem, which was a rock musical based on obviously Oedipus, and it was a lot of fun. And now David is he's one of the biggest directors on Broadway right now. He did MacArthur Genius Grant recipient.
Wow.
And just the sweetest guy walking and deserves every bit of adulation that he's currently getting. A brilliantly talented man.
I love Helen Hunt, so.
Yeah, no, and this production is supposed to be phenomenal, so.
But you said there's a joke there. Somebody told me this joke. Who was it? They said, I lost something. Or somebody was accusing somebody of losing something, and they got into an argument, and Helen Hunt was involved, and I'm going to blow the joke. And the punchline is, go to Helen Hunt for it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
What a bad way to tell a joke.
Would you say that again? Would you just give me the punchline one more time?
Yeah, go to Helen Hunt for it.
Thank you. That's all I got.
That's all I have.
For further information about any productions and or events mentioned in today's State of the Arts Live calendar, visit us at stateoftheartsla.com. We also suggest you drop in at performingartslive.com, where you can search for Southern California events in several different categories happening every day of the damn week.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And you know, Paul, before we come up on Joel's interview, can we play a piece of music, another piece of music?
Yes, we can.
Before we start talking to him,
actually,
I dug that last song.
Yeah, you know what? We won't get to all of Sordid Celebration, so let me start it, and then that way we can play a little portion of it, and then play the rest when we go off the air. So this is also from The Demise, which, by the way, you can attend Thursday night if you go to On the Rocks or do a Facebook search for The Demise.
8 o'clock.
Find all of the information. And the composer is actually preparing canapes that night in the kitchen. So this is called Sordid Celebration. It is from The Demise.
Eternity. Two words not written on the wall. The paper in the fire burning. Books of my history's bad falls. And in this sordid celebration, all the animals emerging from mankind. In this sordid celebration, angels holy and self-inflicted swine. I ain't
mind. No need to counter intuition. No need to find out if I live or if I die. And in this sordid celebration that cuts into me like a cold blade from beyond, compel, connect, communication. Reach out alone and see if anyone responds. For the first time I feel love. I feel the love from above. For the first time I feel love. I feel the love from above.
I wish I could go on Thursday now.
Yeah.
My appetite is just like, I'm just like jonesing for it now.
And we must credit that fine vocal.
Yeah, who is that?
That was Doug Krieger.
Yeah, the amazing Doug Krieger. Yeah.
Broadway boy Doug Krieger got in rock and roll.
That was great.
That's right. He's awesome. Amazing.
And he's recently moved to L.A. He's here now.
Is that the main character? Is that from the main character?
Yeah,
singing.
He's singing Harry. He's singing the character of Harry.
Okay. And will he be Thursday?
He will be Thursday, yes.
Okay. So what are you singing?
I'm singing the character of the guide. There's a character called the guide who I always thought of maybe a little bit like the leading player in Pippin. He's sort of the guy that kind of brings in the audience and takes them on the ride.
He's the Ben Vereen.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And you scream Ben Vereen to me. Yes.
That's what I've been.
It was either Ben Vereen or Christy McNichol. One of the two. I wasn't sure who it was, but it would have been Ben Vereen. But before Joel speaks anymore, Michael, give him the intro he is due.
That's where I was going, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, our next guest has received 7 ASCAP awards for his songwriting achievement and has been showcased by the Songwriters Hall of Fame and the CMJ Music Festival. He has released 5 original folk rock albums, featuring musicians from the bands of Jeff Buckley, Rufus Wainwright, which is a favorite of Paul's, Duncan Sheik, and Sean Lennon. Featured in Time magazine, as well as being voted Best Houston Guitarist by TicketmasterCitySearch.com, his collaborations with Martha Graham School for Contemporary Dance and the Alvin Ailey Dance Theater have been awarded grants from Meet the Composer and from the Mary Flager Carey Charitable Trust. He teaches music theory, musicianship, and music technology at UCLA. Gee whiz.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Joel Henry Stein. Just a few credits.
You did all that?
Three
really?
Credits.
I don't know. I just talked to some people and collected all of their credits and put them on a page.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't want to say anything about all the red ink crossing out other people's names, but
that is impressive to say the least.
Isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, it's reflected in the music. Yeah. I mean, it's just...
Well, we said something during the time that the second song was on the air, and you said, Paul, it's, you know, it really kind of grabs your
attention. It's infectious, yeah.
And it does, because one thing is, Joel, quite frankly, from my perspective of music and my likes and dislikes of music is... I'm always paying attention to the lyric and the melody and what is redundant or not redundant in a song. And often songs can be lyrically very redundant, and you tire out on that, you know, as a listener.
Yeah.
I know the hook is important, and sometimes that's repeated in a song to, you know, make the point. But this... As Paul said, I mean, from the first song that we heard at the beginning of the show to this song, it's, you know, it just kind of grabs you. It's just kind of laid out beautifully. You obviously know how to write songs, sir.
Thank you.
And lyrics. So
it's
kudos to you.
It's evocative too, because I thought, you know, even the little clips that we listened to so far, it puts a picture in your head.
Exactly.
And you can't have better than that for a rock musical.
And it should. And it better be doing it, you know, pretty quick after the song begins too.
Right.
Generally speaking, that's when an audience is. Attention span is very brief, so they catch it in the first 10-15 seconds. Is this going to stick with them? I would say yes in this case.
What?
Thank you.
What is the character talking about? If you don't mind letting this be known this early in the creative process, but what is the sort of celebration that he's talking about? This character.
I think what he's talking about here, he's talking about. I think his main thing that he's getting at is wow, like. This life is amazing. Despite all the darkness and the baggage that we have to carry or deal with at some point, at the end of the day, this life is still amazing. I think that's what, and that's what he's realizing in the show. This is a crucial point in the show. It's about maybe 2/3 of the way into the show. He's dealt with a lot of demons already.
Okay.
He's had to look within himself, and this is the point where he's I don't want to give too much away.
Gotcha.
He's made some significant decisions at this point, and he's realizing, wow, I'm alive. I have something to give. This world is amazing. This life is amazing.
And a bit of a eureka moment for him.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's celebratory.
And for the people listening, because we're looking at this, but it is sorted, S-O-R-D-I-D, not sorted as in assorted. It's sorted.
Right.
And sometimes that won't...
Thank you for pointing that out.
Yes. Good point. Yeah, it's now, a completely different tale. Yeah.
In your collaborative association here, the music was written first, is that correct? Or you had many, many songs that you wrote?
I had a bunch of songs already, and they weren't written with a story in mind, actually. These were songs that were sitting around that hadn't made it onto any of my albums for whatever reason. And this is going back a ways, but in early 2005, actually, I started sitting down with these stacks of songs that were sitting around, and I realized that there was a theme in a lot of these songs. There was some kind of spiritual struggle that I'd been putting into these lyrics. And so I tried to start writing a story based on these themes and characters that were coming up in some of these songs. And in 2007 or 2008, that's when I met up with Elizabeth. We already knew each other very well, but I got in touch with her and we started working on the project together. And we realized as we started putting the story together, there were definitely gaps in our story. The songs that I had already didn't deliver the whole story, mm-hmm. not even close. So I had to start writing some new songs, to deliver on the narrative.
Devicon was one of those songs.
Okay.
That was a new song.
Right.
Because it introduced the whole idea of Devicon.
Yeah, and Devicon is the club that Harry is trying to get to. It's way uptown. And, it's a metaphor for a higher consciousness, maybe.
Okay. So the your contribution, Elizabeth, definitely, it doesn't sound like that you're working self-contained. It's sounding like you're very, very collaborative. And that the book has informed the lyrics tremendously.
It has. I mean, I don't want to speak for Joel, but I know that my role in it has definitely evolved into I'm not writing the music, but I'm definitely helping define what other music needs to be written and how the arrangements of the music that already exists is in its best narrative form.
Okay.
Does that make sense, Joel?
I'm thinking of one song in particular, actually, which we've nixed. It's not even in the show anymore, but we originally had this song called Mirror Man, and that took on several different guises, mm-hmm. because it was originally it was kind of a folky song, and then we turned that into more of a twisted carnival song to fit into the story, and that was something that Elizabeth brought, was these ideas of, well, why don't we change how this song comes across by the way you play it and the feel of it. I'm just giving that as an example. We don't have that song anymore.
But all that stuff informs the later things. If you're making a recipe, just to go back to the food mm-hmm. metaphor again, mm-hmm. you have to put some stuff in to realize the next time you make it, you have to leave that out. It's just part of the process.
Yeah,
it's
that's
like,
right.
You know.
Now, being a teacher, as you are, and you're currently teaching at UCLA?
I am. I'm teaching music.
Have you laid some of this music on your students?
That's a good question. I have not yet, actually.
Really?
No, it's funny. There's a part of me, the teacher part of me, rarely brings the rock and roll to school.
Did they know about your project, though?
Yeah. My current students, will they
be able to come to your project?
Most of them can't. I'm teaching mostly freshmen, and they're all under 21. I think I have one student who said she's going to try to make it. Yeah, it's a shame. At this venue. The next time, we're going to maybe try to do it somewhere where, it's all ages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure they would be thrilled. I mean, to have their teacher come up with this and.
I don't know, right? Though. The demise at Pinkberry might be a little difficult to pull off effectively, don't you think?
I don't even know how to respond to that one.
they could do a yogurt after it or something,
You have to write a jingle into the show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just tuck it in there. Tuck some product placement in there. It sure is hot. Boy, a Pinkberry would really cool me off.
How many actors are in this play who are also singing this show?
Well, in this concert, we have most of the actors represented, I think, most of the characters, right?
Yeah.
So let's see, we have to just go through the names of the characters. So there's Harry, who's the main character. We've talked about him a little bit. There's the guide, who
let's
I'll
credit
be playing
those people.
For. Who are... Great, yeah. So yeah. Harry will be sung by Doug Krieger.
Right.
Amazing singer. We heard his voice just a few minutes ago. And I'll be singing the role of the guide. And then we've got Lara Johnston, who's singing the role of Natalie.
That was the first song we heard.
Correct.
Devo Devcon.
Yeah. Yes.
And Natalie, the character of Natalie, she's trying to get people to audition for this club, Devcon. That's what that song Devcon is what she's singing about. Everyone, come audition for this awesome club. And then we've got Liz Rodriguez, who's singing the role of Karen. And Karen is a character in the show. We named her after the Greek myth character Charon, who ferries people over the river Styx when they're in Hades. In our show, it happens on the Hudson.
In a gondola.
In a gondola.
You need a little humor when your show is called The Demise.
Yeah. So she's singing a song called Lightness Comes. That's Liz Rodriguez. And then we've got
Donovan Lyman.
Donovan Lyman, and he's singing the role of Jesus, right? Is he doing Jesus?
No, Jesus sings Block.
Oh, right, I'm doing Jesus for this one, yeah.
Bucket.
So he's
Aren't
doing
glad
Bucket.
Elizabeth
Bucket.
Is
I'm
here.
Very glad Elizabeth's
hand
here.
To lend. So Donovan Lyman will be singing the role of Bucket,
right.
And Bucket is named Bucket because he plays the bucket.
Yeah.
Oh. So there, Joel.
Thank you, Elizabeth. No, it's true. I really am glad to have Elizabeth on board all the time.
Are you sure you're the composer of this, really? Are you sure?
Last I checked.
We have an amazing ensemble who's also singing with us. There are a couple more characters, but we, because of time limitations, we just weren't going to get all of those.
So we have four other people. We've got Adam Kern, and we've got Bernadette Mondock, and
Jaron
Forgey. And who we said?
And Adam.
Who are we forgetting? No, and Enrico. Enrico Lopez Yanez.
Okay. Yeah. And of course, Chris Meehan.
Chris Meehan. And we've got a great band, too, playing.
One thing, let Chris sing, though. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
Well, he wouldn't wear eyeliner, so he won't be singing.
He wouldn't wear.
Now you gave a lot away.
Oh, okay.
That's funny. He wears eyeliner when he comes here.
He does. But oddly enough, on his forehead, which I don't understand at all.
Oh, poor Chris.
Little tiny mirror.
Have an amazing band, too.
We do. Okay. Terrence Harrison is playing drums, and Ryan Malstead is playing the bass, and Sarah Ellis is playing keyboard.
You're...
And they rock. And I'm playing guitar and keyboard also and singing. Yeah.
So you are a native of Houston?
No, I lived there for a long time. I went to college there, and I stuck around there for a while. I went to New York for a few years, came back to Houston for a few years, went back to New York.
Now Houston's actually a great music city, isn't it?
It really is.
Oh,
there's quite a bit there. And great
the alley.
Alley is phenomenal. I'm so privileged to have worked there. Feel very honored to have worked there. And the Houston Symphony is fantastic. The Houston Grand Opera is amazing. There's tons of modern art going on. It's a very cool town. It's the fourth biggest city in the country. A lot of people don't realize that.
And a lot of people don't realize how culturally rich it is. Just not Houston, but Texas. I mean, Austin, Texas. I mean, there's so much going on there.
It's
so
really
vibrant.
True.
And beautiful. I mean, Austin's particularly beautiful. I mean, Houston's quite green, as I remember. But
parts of it are green. Parts of it. It's very flat. Very flat.
Well, Texas is flat. Have you ever been to Lubbock?
I've driven through Lubbock. Yeah.
That is the most elegant way I've ever heard anyone say Lubbock. Who said Lubbock? There was a wonderful lilt in that. It was just. Is that how you say it? Lubbock?
No.
No, you said Lubbock.
Lubbock.
You said Lubbock.
Yeah. Lubbock. Yeah. Lubbock, Texas. I did a play there for called Star Spangled Girl. I was an actor in my younger days, and we were there forever in the middle of Lubbock, Texas. It was a big
the old joke.
Extending it.
We spent a week there one afternoon.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in Texas, this is one thing I remember about being in Lubbock, and that was that it was a terrible storm one day not lightning, but just heavy-duty rain.
Yeah, yeah.
And this theater was a huge theater, but it was located in the middle of nowhere in Lubbock. I mean, you had to drive to find... Suddenly you would see a building, and you knew you were there because it was the only theater, only building for miles. And it was raining so hard that they say... I guess there's a saying that's specific to Texas, and that the fog... that it was raining frogs. And what the illusion is the frogs are jumping up from the ground as the rain is coming down, because I guess it's the rain affects them and causes them to jump. So it actually looks like, you've never heard this?
I've heard that. I always assumed it was something else. I thought it was a biblical reference.
No, actually. Actually do jump up. Wow. And it looks like, and they come back down, so it looks like it's raining frogs. And it in mass all around you. And of course, we're in the middle of nowhere, so this is going to be very, you know, they're...
It probably,
frog life is prominent.
It probably became a biblical reference when people had that happen to them, you know, at that time, and just, you know, it would scare the shit out of me. Wouldn't, don't you think?
You can say that on the radio?
Oh, yeah, it's the internet, you know, just FCC.
That we frown upon.
Michael doesn't like
that. We frown upon those kinds of
words. Lubbock, Texas, Buddy Holly's birthplace.
Buddy
Holly was born in Lubbock, Texas. And Mac Davis had a great song in the 70s. I'm talking about dating myself here, but Mac Davis had a song, and one of the lyrics I remember was, "I thought happiness was Lubbock, Texas in my rearview mirror."
Oh, I like that title. How was it dating yourself in the 70s?
Was dating myself in the 70s? It was difficult, but I'm a contortionist, as you know. I took yoga to make things easier.
You always make it work.
You know, and I still have that crick in my neck, but that's a whole other story.
That's a whole
other
show.
We got 5 minutes left. Do either of you have, we talked earlier about having some, I want to hear from Elizabeth the third grade nightmare performance.
Oh my gosh,
third
yeah.
grade nightmare performance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't get nervous now.
I'm not.
Don't leave anything out.
I'll try not to. Okay. I have to remember that far back. No, it was third grade, and I was in one of Aesop's fables. I was in The Fox and the Crow. I was playing the crow. I didn't really have any lines, but my big moment was I was standing on a chair, dressed all in black. I had a piece of wrapped Velveeta cheese in my mouth. And
much like,
you know,
she is today.
Yeah. when the fox comes and, you know, persuades me to release the cheese from my beak, I'm supposed to just open my mouth and the cheese is supposed to fall down. And because it was wrapped in plastic, it stuck to my lips, and I started like nodding my head, and the cheese would not fall from my mouth.
One task in that role to make that parable work is you have to drop the cheese.
That's right.
And it was stuck.
I couldn't do it. So that was my
demise.
How was it resolved?
Well.
You didn't cut the cheese.
I beg your pardon.
Suddenly the crow developed seizure disorder.
The crow had hands. And then the cheese was taken from my mouth and dropped on the stage. So that was so far, thankfully, as far as I can remember, my biggest snafu when it comes to performance.
And interestingly enough, Joel's he played the role of a fox in third grade. And before the show, super glued a Velveeta wrapper.
Found left in a dressing room somewhere.
What about you, Joel? You got a tale for us, or has anything come to your mind?
You know, we were talking about Texas. I have a Texas performance story, actually.
Good.
I was driving to Texas from the East Coast going back to college for my sophomore year, and I've been driving all day. I was driving from Atlanta, I think, that day, and I'd been on the road for like 13 hours or something. I was delirious. And about an hour and a half outside of Houston, I had to get a bite to eat, stopped at McDonald's. I was still eating McDonald's in those days. And went inside. I was with a buddy of mine who was driving his car, too, and we were both delirious. We ordered some food, ate our little thing, and there was a guy up on the stage doing like one of those marathon, like raise money for cystic fibrosis or something.
He was singing. There was a stage at McDonald's?
There was a stage at McDonald's, and this guy was singing quite poorly some bad country songs.
What are the odds?
Yeah, imagine that. In East Texas.
Yeah. At a McDonald's.
At a McDonald's. Yeah. So my friend convinced me to go up there and ask the guy if... Actually, I think he went up there and asked the guy if his friend, this guy Joel, could come up and maybe play a song or two. And the guy was just kind of shocked. He was so shocked that he actually let me just go up there and play, because no one had ever asked him, you know, anything like that. So I got up there, and I started playing Bob Dylan's The Times They Are A-Changin'. And keep in mind, I'm in East Texas here. Everyone just, like, puts their stuff down.
They're happy meals.
All their mouths just kind of open, and they just, like, watch me in kind of disbelief. And I just keep playing. I have no idea what's going on. I find out a year later, I find out that I was singing in Vidor, Texas, where they lynch people. I mean, they have a serious racism issue there. And here's Jew Boy Joel like, coming in singing the times they are changing, and I was lucky to get out of there alive.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah.
Was, yeah.
So, I don't know if that's a funny story, but to me it's...
No. The times they are changing.
Quarter pounder and ran, right? Yeah.
The times they are changing.
No, they ain't, city boy. Yeah. We like things just like they are.
Somebody get the door.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. Oh, that's... Oh, man. And that's this was so like scary. What year?
That was 1991.
Yeah, so it's not like we're talking late 60s.
I mean, this is the kind of town where you drive by on the highway and you see big signs that say, don't let the sun go down on you, and word... No, and I'm not going to say it on the air, but
really?
Oh yeah, you see signs like that actually say that.
Oh my gosh, it's hard to believe that still exists.
Yeah.
Hard to believe that still exists. That's another story. Another story, another time, but we don't have the time now because we're at the end of our...
Gotta hear some
No. I love stuff like that. I love stuff like that. It's very fascinating. It's thought-provoking.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This Thursday.
Demise, Thursday night, on the Rocks, the Club Over the Roxy, and go on Facebook and look for The Demise. It's a red and black logo. It's very eye-catching, and we're going to I want to go back to Devicon, play off the air with that one.
Great.
So this is from The Demise, and thank you both so much for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Elizabeth, thank you so much.
As we did.
This is wonderful. Thank you.
And Michael, I'll see you next week.
Yes, you will.
Okay.
Thank you, Paul.
Listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.